Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area, in Hillsborough, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, The 7 Biggest Mistakes Homeowners Make When Hiring a Realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on The 21 Most Expensive Mistakes Tampa Home Buyers Make When Buying a Home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. Man, we got a really cool dude with us today. We're with the one and only Mark Muddy Dutton. And he's a very cool guy, and you'll come to know him as Muddy Stardust. I just want to give Kevin Cipriano a big thank you for hooking us up. Thanks, Kevin. So Mark Dutton's been playing music for 35 years. He started on trumpet, quickly moved to piano, began singing and playing bass and guitar in rock bands, and never looked back. He's since become a producer and songwriter. He's toured around the world many times, and he's either played with, produced, engineered, co-written, or toured with artists like Chris Robinson from the Black Crows, in his band, the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. Great band if you've never checked them out. Mark Ford, Kathy Valentine, Dwight Yoakam, the Go-Go's, LA Guns, Gilby Clark, Jessica Simpson, the Brian Jonestown Massacre. And he's currently the bass player and vocalist for Chris Shiflett's band. Chris is from the Foo Fighters, of course. When he's not touring, Muddy and his partner, Audrey Wright. And I say partner, and it's just his partner, not his partner like sexually. I mean, I don't know. It might be his partner sexually, but like, nobody, it's not his anything. Wife, you know, it's his actual business partner. God, how am I, deep shit am I getting myself into? They run Maud Entertainment, and they develop up and coming young artists, and they help guide them through, you know, the complicated music business and try to help them out and get them sorted and get them noticed. And they've both got a lot of experience in doing this. He's currently in pre-production of 2 shows made for TV. He's got an after-school music program called Mr. Muddy's Music Machine, where kids in kindergarten through 8th grade learn and perform Glee-style versions of popular music, past and present. Mark, thanks so much for your time, dude. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. 8 a.m. in L.A. I am so fucking impressed, let me tell you right now.
Hey, man, so stay up late.
You stayed up? You haven't gotten to bed yet.
I used to, yeah.
Hey, how did you first get started in the music business? Like, let's say your first adult gigs.
Oh, man. You know, the gig that stands out the most, I used to be into martial arts when I was younger.
Oh, cool.
And my teacher, for some reason, found out that I was playing in a band, and had us play at one of the, you know, the black belt ceremony things.
Oh, that's really cool.
And I had this band with 2 girl singers and, you know, me on bass and a drummer. And we played for all these people, and everybody was just kind of watching us, scratching our head. You know, we played Josie Cotton songs and all sorts of, you know, new wavy type stuff. And that's the gig that sticked out for me, that was like, wow, this is really a weird thing. But as far as, I don't know, you know, my first band was Burning Tree, really. You know, like I had solo bands in Orange County. My first band was Burning Tree with Mark Ford and Donny Costello. And that was our, you know, that was my real, my first foray into the business. I told my parents, I was in college actually. I think I was at like, I was either at UC Irvine or Cal State Fullerton at the time. And I just came home one day and I just said, Mom, Dad, I'm out. I gotta do music. I'm gonna get signed. We're gonna get signed and be famous. You know, like everybody said. Yeah. And thought. And sure enough, a few months later we got signed. So at that point, my parents stopped panicking a little bit, and then it just kind of all moved forward from there.
So they sound like they were supportive anyway, but they were just obviously concerned as a parent would be. But they were supportive.
My parents were, you know, so supportive, and you know, they hated that I did that. And to be honest, that's one of my biggest regrets, is not finishing school. And not only just for my own sake, but because they worked so hard to allow us to have the life we have.
Sure.
I feel like it was a little disrespectful at this point. But they were, you know, they were very involved. They were always at my gigs. They were always in the front row, embarrassing me, you know, like with money t-shirts on and stuff like that, you know. And my dad, I actually flew my dad out to tour dates with CRB.
That's awesome. That's a great band. Him.
You know, everybody loved my dad.
That's so cool, man.
He was the fun guy, you know. He's a real working class Scotsman, you know, who just busted his butt and worked his way up.
What'd your dad do?
He started out, you know, like a craftsman, you know, he did carpentry and he worked in like an acid burning plant.
Holy crap.
In Scotland, where they just, you know, they ate asbestos sandwiches and acid all day. And then when he came to America, he just figured it out. He became like the head of an engineering department at a company called Fuller Company. And just did it, you know. And he was actually one of my musical inspirations. He used to play sax and clarinet and a big giant accordion when he was a little kid. That's how he made extra money for his family.
You know, I see memes like this in your story of your dad. Reminds you of these memes, like, you know, your dad's working in an acid plant when he's like 20, and now you see a 20-year-old, he's like on Snapchat with bunny ears, and it's like, what the?
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's truly, you know, they talk about the greatest generation. Yeah. I have a hard time arguing. You know what I mean? At this point,
right now, yeah, it's a bit. Yeah. Yeah,
it's, you know, what's funny? Like, if all the instructions, you know, to how the world just got built to this point were gone,
yeah,
we would be back to living in caves
with our smartphones.
No one knows how to do anything anymore. They just watch videos of other people doing it, you know?
Very true. Yeah, man, it's very true. Very true, man. That's really cool about your dad, man. Thank you for sharing that. Hey, and for whatever it's worth, as somebody who's, I think I mentioned to you before we started rolling that I have three kids, your dad never, I know you said I should have gone to school too because of the sacrifice he made. As a dad, you just want your kid to be happy. He probably had never given that a second thought. Because my kids have done so much that, like, at the time, I'm like, man, you know, you had a good opportunity. And I don't give a shit now. I'm just, as long as they're happy today, that's all it's about. Yeah. Yeah, so. All right. How'd you get to also qualify Mark Ford? There's like a bunch of Mark Fords in music, like Robin Ford's brother. Can you qualify the Mark Ford?
I didn't know that.
Ford's brother is Mark Ford.
Mark Ford, of his brothers. Late, like after our band, Burning Tree went for a little while. We were kind of the talk of the town for a minute in Los Angeles. And we made a record and we got to tour with the London Choir Boys. Sharon Osbourne actually put us on that tour. She was managing the Choir Boys at the
time. They were pretty big for a minute. Big.
They were the English version of the Black Crowes. We had the Black Crowes. You know, London had the London Choir Boys. Mm-hmm. And we became really good friends with those guys. I'm actually about to work on Spike's solo record and singer.
That's awesome, man.
It's flying over here. Hopefully, you know, in a few days, and we're going to do his solo record. But Mark, you know, we grew up in Cerritos with Donnie, the drummer, and I was in Fullerton, and we kept bumping into each other. At
Fullerton, as in that's the home. Wasn't that the home offender?
Say again.
Was in Fullerton the home offender?
It was.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It
yeah.
was, and you know, when I was in elementary school and junior high, I was right by the Fender factory. It was just a few blocks away from my school. People would dumpster dive, pull out whole Stratocasters and Telecasters because they put the label on wrong.
Oh, you know, crap.
And they would have this beautiful Telecaster. And then, of course, the smart guys would go in there and just start collecting parts and
right.
then sell them, you know, at exorbitant rates to all the rest of us. But anyway, so we're talking about Mark Ford, who later joined the Black Crowes.
Right. It's interesting. I don't know if you know this band. The modern day version of the Black Crowes is another English band called the Temperance Movement. Do you know those guys?
No, I don't.
They're really good. It was funny because I listened to the guitar player. I interviewed the guitar player, Matt White, very cool guy. These guys are all in their early 40s probably. And I listened to their band. I thought they were for some reason, I thought they were like an alt band, but I'm listening to them. Like I said, hey man, you guys sound like the Black Crowes. In fact, their lead singer is this like Scottish guy. Just, you know, talk about Scotland. He's a Scottish guy, total Scotsman accent, but he sounds like he's from the South. I'm like, how the hell does he do that? He goes, I don't know. He goes, everybody asks us. But they're like the modern day Black Crowes. They sound just like, I mean, they're doing their thing, but the same exact genre of, you know, R&B. Check them out. They're called the Temperance Movement. Yeah, they're a really good band. And if you want to hook up with, if you want to talk to them, I can get you an introduction to Matt White. He's a super cool guy. So talk about, how'd you get the name Muddy Stardust now? That's a very cool nickname.
So when Burning Tree first got together, you know, we went over to England. We did a, you know, Black Crowes tour and a London Choir Boys tour. Mark is M-A-R-C. I'm M-A-R-K. And we would do interviews and they would constantly get, you know, our quotes wrong. Not that anybody gave a shit.
Yeah,
you know right. what I mean? To us, it's like, oh, that's my idea or my opinion, you know, yeah. back in the day when your ego, you know, steered the ship.
Yeah.
But I was listening to Muddy Waters one day, and the next interview, he said, he told everybody, my name's Muddy.
to eliminate the mark.
M-U-D, and I was listening to Muddy Waters, and then I started seeing these, you know, interviews in magazines, you know, those magazine things that they used to have and people read with paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen those.
And it was, that was it. It just never went away. And I was like, all right.
So now you're Muddy. So he did that to clarify.
Then the second evolution of that was I was in a band with Slim Jim Phantom called Colonel Parker. And you know, we did some covers. We played with Buddy Guy. We did a tour with Buddy Guy. And I think I did a cover of Ziggy Stardust where I sang, right? I just sang that one for whatever reason. And when it came time to credit, you know, to write all the credits for the record, I was MIA. God knows where I was or what I was doing. But they couldn't get a hold of me. So Slim Jim just credited me as Muddy Stardust. And then that was that.
And that was it. The legend was born. That's so funny, man.
I don't know if I could live up to a name like that. But
that's a very cool name, Muddy Stardust. It's like very, you need to have a really involved story for that. Like, you know, I went on a pilgrimage to Turkey and I took some drugs.
Well, I was on a pilgrimage, I guess. But I certainly wasn't in Turkey.
What was your first big break that you got?
Oh, man. A lot of breaks, you know, but I think besides Burning Tree, my first break, big break after that was LA Guns. And I walked in, there was a place called the Cat Club on Sunset, and Slim Jim Phantom owned it, right?
Oh, okay.
And it was the place where everybody went, and it just was the greatest. It had the greatest vibe and the greatest rock jams, and everybody would hop up on stage and play a couple of songs, and everybody was just happy the whole time, just, you know, digging music and being right there, you know? Yeah. So I walked in for some reason with these two tall blonde girls on each arm.
God bless you, man.
Black fur. I had a black fur coat thing. I looked like I was in parliament or something, you know? And I had this black, like, furry leather long coat, and I was wearing these big platform boots and bell bottoms, you know?
There you go.
And I walk in the middle of jam thinking I'm just, you know, King of Shit Mountain. And sitting down as I walked in was Tracy Guns watching the jam. And he looked up at me, he's like, Muddy, how you doing? And I fringely knew Tracy, but not really well. They were kind of intimidating to me. And I was just like that whole 80s, you know, kind of hairband thing was just not my thing. I didn't get it, you know? But LA Guns actually kind of have a little bit of a weird punk rock kind of thing to
definitely
them too. But anyway, he just said, hey, you want to play bass in LA Guns? And I just, you know, I was probably three sheets to the wind. So I said, hell yeah. And then that started a 4-year, you know, Spinal Tap-ish life of touring, you know, with LA Guns. And it was fantastic. You know, Phil and Tracy are old school, you know, they're old school rock stars. And I don't know how, you know, people may argue like, yeah, you know, there was really Guns N' Roses or whatever, and maybe they weren't as big or whatever, but they were real, man. They and he's still doing it.
He's still doing it. Yeah, really hardcore now. He's out touring and
yeah, but that was like, I'm always grateful for that.
That's cool. And Tracy, does he know?
Was very cool to me. Tracy, you know, I'm not sure how it ended. It always ends a little rough with things, you know, but I think I quit because there wasn't enough money for me to be able to go out. But I always remember Tracy telling me one thing that, you know, that has stuck with me forever. I was frustrated one day and he said, Muddy, the one thing you have to remember, the strongest word in the English language is no. Say no sometimes. Don't be afraid to say no. Once you're not afraid to say no, it becomes much more clearer when you should say yes and when you should say no. And I never forgot that. Words of wisdom from, you know.
Are you good about saying no now?
Yeah, you have to say, you know, saying no in a thoughtful, you know, forward-thinking way. Yeah, you have to say no in order to get to the place you want to get to. You can't be afraid. Like I'm a people pleaser. Like I hate it if people don't, you know, like me or respect me, you know, and as I get older, I care less and less, you know.
Good for you.
But it interfered with my, you know, with my forward movement in my career, you know, and in my personal development. You can't do that. You have to be open to criticism and open to your shortcomings.
Yeah.
You know, but in this business, it's so hard to do that. You just have to be, you know, super confident about everything you do. Or people will, you know, the vultures will come in and start picking your bones.
You know, that's a very, very common issue for a lot of people of, you know, I like, you know, it's important to me to be liked and I have a hard time saying no. But as you said, the problem is when you don't set up those healthy boundaries, then you wind up resenting not only the other person, but yourself, because fuck, why didn't I say no? So that's a lot of people, I think, that I've spoken, you know, at least probably half of the people are, you know, struggle with that and or that's their issue, you know.
I did in my early producing career, I did a Humpers record for like $99.
Yeah, you should have definitely said no to that.
Super fun. It was a drunk tank. I think was the single.
Drunk
Tank. They actually ended up getting signed, I think, years later on Epitaph.
Wow. All right. So I'm going to name some artists you've worked with. Talk about how you got the gig and a cool or interesting story about working with them. Let's start with Chris Robinson and the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. What a great band. I told you I saw them like 5 years ago down here.
Yeah. Yeah. We had all become friends, you know, on the first tour. We toured with them on their first record. And then Burning Tree broke up and Mark joined the band. And then I hadn't talked to Mark in a while after that. Every once in a while we'd talk on the phone. And then years went by and I was working in my backyard doing something and the phone rang and a guy said, "Hey, Muddy, what's going on? It's Chris." And I'm like, "Chris, you know, Chris who?" Chris Robinson. And I'm like, "What? Oh, cool. What's going on, man? How are you?" He's like, "Listen, man, I hate to do this to you, but can I borrow $5,000? And I was like, I was stunned, you know, so I kind of paused for a second and I'm like, okay, I guess, sure. He says, "No, I'm just fucking with you. I'm putting a band together. I need a bass player." And that was it.
That was it.
And then I did that for about 5 years.
Wow. That's a funny, funny.
Chris is, I don't know if people know this about Chris, but he is one of the funniest people I have ever met in my life. And that includes cool. Professional funny people. He's really well-read. He's a super well-read person. And, you know, he devours books. He'll go through a stack of books on a tour, you know? And, he's probably one of the most naturally talented singers I've ever come across.
He's a super great. He's an amazing writer, man. He writes some great freaking songs.
Great writer, great, just absolutely natural singer. You know, him and Dwight Yoakam, I think, for me, are the two greatest singers I've ever had the pleasure of working with.
When did you work with Dwight? How long did you work with Dwight?
Oh, I only played 4 or 5 gigs with Dwight.
Was this when Pete was in the band, Pete Anderson, or was that when?
It's always a funny story with me. I got a phone call. Pete Addis, played with a little while. Ex Marine, I think. I was either Kate or Mick to call me. Said, "Buddy, you think you could do a Dwight Yoakam gig?" And I'm, you know, I said, "Sure. Whatever. I can play whatever you want me to play." And they said, "Well, it's in like 2 days, you know, at the house in Los Angeles." And I said, "Oh, fuck. Okay. Well, just, you know, send me the set. And let me work chat a little bit." So their management sends me a stack of CDs like this big, like his whole career of CDs. And they want, and I just call back, like, "I can't do this. Just give me the song that you're doing currently." That was 30 songs.
Holy crap.
So I did it, man. I just busted my ass. I locked myself in a room. I learned it all as best as I could. You know, the high harmonies, 3-part harmonies on everything. It was top. That was
that's one crazy, of the hardest man. 30 songs in 2 days. That's nuts, man.
Come gig night, I am probably more nervous than I've ever been.
Right.
So I'm on stage waiting for the curtain. I think there was a curtain, but we're waiting for Dwight to walk on stage. I've never met him. I've never even talked to him. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, Dwight Yoakam. So he walks.
You've never met him.
He walks past me. He looks at me. He's like, "Nice to meet you, buddy, Dwight Yoakam." Like Elvis. Seriously, it was like meeting Elvis. He walked up to the mic, killed it, right? And then he invited me in the bus afterwards. I thought, "Oh shit, here we go." He dropped that note, you know, on all. And he just said, "Hey, thank you, buddy. You know, that was really fun." And then his management started calling me for different gigs.
Oh, that's great. You know?
And then we did. He's the guy. That was also one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever done. He we were doing a sound check for the first of a few gigs. And he looked over at me and said, "Oh, Muddy, I want you to play upright on this." And the tour manager is telling Dwight, "It's like, no, we told you, Dwight, Muddy doesn't play upright. He only plays electric." So his tour manager says, you know, Muddy only plays electric. So Dwight grimaces a little bit, and you know, he's frustrated, and then he turns around and he looks at me. He's like, it's got four goddamn strings on it. What the hell is the difference? So he makes the tour manager bring me upright up on stage. And he says, "Buddy, you want to try this?" I said, "Sure, I'll give it a try." And so I played like five or six songs on upright. I had never played an upright in my life.
Oh, that was so really?
I put little pieces of tape on the back, you know, so I knew where the frets were.
Good for you.
And that was it. And that's how I started playing upright.
Did was it Pete Anderson at that time?
No, it wasn't Pete. It was Keith Gaddis. Keith Gaddis was the first guitar player, and then
so this is way back.
This was back. Yeah. This was years ago. And then Brian Whelan. Then I did a couple gigs with Brian Whelan.
He's a really nice guy.
I love Brian. Yeah,
I interviewed him. He's a really sweet guy. Yeah, he's a really sweet guy. Okay, so wait a minute. No, this is after Pete Anderson then. This was before they got Eugene Edwards.
Yeah, there were two camps.
Yeah.
You know, the Anderson camp and the Dwight Yoakam camp, and I guess the two that shan't meet.
Yeah. Well, Pete is a great guitar player, man. He produced all of Dwight's early stuff.
Yeah. That was really great production. That was really original production for country.
Yeah.
You know?
He's a really smart guy. Really smart guy. Gilby Clark.
Gilby, you know, honestly, I can't remember how I started playing with Gilby. But it was mostly me, Gilby, and Chad Stewart, who plays in Faster Pussycat now. It was just a three-piece thing. I really liked the idea of doing a three-piece. So we did a lot of touring, him and I.
Under his name, Gilby Clark Trio?
It was under Gilby Clark, and that was after L.A. Guns.
Right.
That's probably how he kind of connected with me. Through Cat Club and L.A. Guns.
Any funny rock and roll stories from that?
Oh God, so many.
I figured.
I got to do that after everyone's dead. pretty good stuff though.
Yeah,
pretty
after fun. Everyone's dead. Kathy Valentine and the Go-Go's.
I've played gigs with Kathy, and I produced her first record. And I got to work. I got to work with the Go-Go's. I was working for a company under a guy named Kerry Brown, and we were doing movie music and television music and whatever, you know. But we would also record people every once in a while. They would just come up, you know. His wife is Stacey Scheer, you know, who did who's a producer. She's a movie producer who, you know, whose roster is just incredible. Pulp Fiction, Canada. Oh, wow. Fisher King.
Holy smokes.
Great stuff. Just really good stuff. But anyway, so we got to work with, you know, Billy Corgan, Courtney Love, Jessica Simpson. And we got to do, every once in a while they'd come up and then they'd need a song done for whatever reason, you know. And the Go-Go's came up because I think they were thinking about some kind of a show that they wanted to do. So they came up and did a song for that. And I got to work with the Go-Go's. I had known Kathy already.
Yeah.
But that was really funny because they just came up one at a time. I think they were fighting at the time.
Oh, my God.
Lot of bands, you know. But they didn't really want to hang out with each other, I guess. So, you know, I did drums one day. And then Kathy came in, we did bass, you know, then Belinda came in, you know, we did vocals. It was funny. And then of course there was a telephone game, you know, hey, can you turn up the drums or can you turn up the bass? Or the
guitar? Oh my God.
That was actually kind of funny. They were really fun to work with though. They were pretty funny.
That's cool. So you're like therapist / producer / musician.
Mostly therapist.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
Yeah.
And then you're currently working with Chris Shiflett. How'd you guys connect?
Yeah, he just switched bands. He went with that went really well. That was fun. We did 2 different years of touring with them in between Foo Fighters gigs. And he's got, I think, schedules and availability and stuff kind of made it so he just wanted to start over with a new group of people. So he's doing that now. But that was good. That was fun. He was fun to work with, and we had some good times.
What would you say, if you can, what's the top 3 musical experiences that you've had? Because you've done a lot for a long time.
Brian Jones Sound Massacre.
Interesting. Why is that?
Probably easily my most valuable experience on different levels. Doing those records, I did 2 records with them. Give It Back, that we recorded in 7 days at Peer Publishing.
7 days. That's
That awesome. That was pretty rough. They split on tour like on the 8th day, and I finished mixing and overdubbing and all that.
I read a little bit about, they've split a lot. There's a lot of stress in that band, from what I understand. Is that putting it mildly? Am I being like really politically correct?
Yeah. Anton is a very, first of all, he's one of the purest artists I've ever worked with. By far. That guy, it's painful for him not to be making art, you know, in exactly the way that he wants to make it. You know, it's physically painful for the guy. So, and he's really the only guy I've met that, you know, flips the industry the bird and means it. It's not for show. He doesn't care. You know, he just cares about doing music.
I've learned when someone says that so-and-so is a pure artist.
Druggy stuff and a lot of tensions, not a lot of money and a lot of work. But I truly became a producer on that second record. That was one of the hardest things and greatest things, I think, I've done.
The first record was Give It Back that you did. The second one was...
Give It Back was at, I came on board at the end of a string of producers that got fired.
Wow.
Because they didn't want to do it.
Not too much pressure.
It's really difficult. It's really hard. If you watch that movie, Dig, it's kind of, it's that.
Okay.
There's nothing pretend about that documentary. I think there's a book now too, actually. But I came in at the end of that, so it wasn't that hard. And there's a lot of stories about Anton, you know, freaking out on people. And for whatever reason, Anton always showed me a lot of respect, and I showed him respect back. And on the second record, I mean, I think he fired me 6 or 7 times on the second record. And then I just got used to getting up in the morning and drinking coffee near the studio because I knew I was going to get a call. Where are you? You know, get in here. We got to finish this. Wow. So, yeah, that was crazy, but I really did like the guy, and I really liked the fact that he gave me that chance. He put my name on the cover of the record.
Oh man, that's,
you know, and nobody. That's cool. I don't know if he ever did that before. You know, it was that really meant a lot to me, and it really made me want to work really hard for the guy and root for him.
What was the second record you did? What was that name?
Strung Out in Heaven.
Great name.
Yeah. Yeah, he was great. He was the mastermind of all of that stuff. But he made me realize that being a producer isn't controlling everything. Sometimes it's allowing the chaos to happen to the point where it's not productive anymore. And then you have to step in and, you know, draw lines.
Second, number two, top three experiences.
Wow. Man, that's hard. I would have to say just musical experiences. I would have to say, you know, my first touring with Burning Tree, you know, we got to go out with the Choir Boys and the Black Crows and Dogs to Moor. And I think we went out with the Four Horsemen because we were young and we thought we knew everything. And then, you know, later you realize you don't know anything.
It's but weird it was, how that works, isn't it?
Fantastic. We got to see the world and figure out, you know, and you know, we got to realize what that life is. You know, that's a tough life, just touring all the time and never being home.
It's really tough. I don't know how, you know, obviously I've talked to almost 600 musicians. Yeah, it's really tough. I don't know how you guys, it's not something I would have wanted to do. And I respect so much the commitment that you guys all make to either your art or to your instrument or to just playing to sac, because it's a huge sacrifice, man. You know, a guy gets on a plane, you know, he lives in California, gets on a plane and to fly to New York to do a gig one night. And then he goes to Germany for two nights and then flies back to California. That's really difficult, man. That's not easy at all. You know, it's like it's time travel.
It's not. I mean, when you're, for me, you know, when you're young and you're still looking for things, you're still looking for, you know, whatever, what you think is going to fill that hole.
Yeah.
It's great because you wake up in a new place and it's a new opportunity.
Right.
For something new to happen, you know?
Sure.
But I don't like to go on long tours anymore just because I love my wife and I like being home.
Yeah, I feel really you.
I really like producing and working, you know, trying to work on something of substance, you know, in a world of ones and zeros.
That was you were very politically correct. What would be number three? Third best experience? Brian Jonestown Massacre, touring with Burning Tree.
I would say, man, I don't know. You know, there's so many of them. I like to, you know, I make videos now too. I make music videos. So doing writing and directing, co-directing my first music videos was pretty great.
What were some of those videos?
Blue Stroud is one of them. A song called Blue Town, and a band called Bow, BEAUXX, and with a song called Thing One.
Cool, man. Yeah, you've done so much stuff. You said you're originally from Fullerton?
Yeah.
What was your childhood like growing up?
You know, it was pretty nice. You know, it was pretty beautiful. Felt like a smaller town back then, and it was pretty great. And then as I became a teenager, you know, we had all the bands like Adolescence, Social Distortion, Agent Orange. We had all the punk rock bands. You know, I think we shared a space with Mike Ness, a little rehearsal space at one point. And it was pretty great. There was a little freaky scene, little art scene of music, and it was pretty cool for a little while.
That's awesome. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have two sisters.
Any of them play music?
Yes. My sister Leanna plays music. They have a band called Honey Slide. And they do Gaelic-y, folky kind of based stuff. That's very cool. It's very atmospheric.
Man, there's so much different music out there, man. I hear, like, that's the one thing I was not expecting. I've been turned on to so much cool music. And my standards for music have changed because I think I understand how tough it is to make music. And so I will hear a record that I may not otherwise have enjoyed, or I wouldn't put it on my repeat list, but I know when the guitarist plays the riff and it's just amazing, and I'm like, man, I know how much that took and I appreciate it so much more. It's really weird. I don't know why, but
I totally hear you. I mean, I listen to a lot of stuff now just because I work with, you know, pop girls and I work with a bunch of different kind of people. And you're right. When you do something and you realize the time and effort that went into it, it's a lot harder to criticize it.
Yeah.
Like a movie, you know, when you work in the movie industry too, you realize, you know, I'm not going to say that was a piece of shit movie anymore. I'm going to say, well, maybe
not my thing, but you know,
corners on the script or the casting or whatever it is, but it's the same with music.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to judge. The problem I have now though is you don't know what you're listening to. You don't know what happened in post with music now.
Oh yeah.
Back because in the day, when you're listening to a Hendrix record, you know, that shit, there's no hiding that.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It was a thing, you know, and Zeppelin, you know, another great example of just an incredible time in creativity and an incredible time in dedication to your craft.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't get to be a singer in the 70s unless you could sing.
Right.
There's no pitch correct. There's no patience for that. No one would even consider letting you do it.
Right. It would be like and it wouldn't even feel right if they did.
Wouldn't feel right. Yeah. It would be ridiculous. Nobody would let it happen.
Right.
I am guilty. I'm as guilty as the next guy of, you know, repairing and patching and fixing and masking and doing whatever I do with Pro Tools. You know, like I play drums on most of the stuff that I record now. Hmm. I'm a great drummer with Pro Tools. You know, I'm an okay drummer outside of that.
Yeah.
But as far as you couldn't take the time to write for the song, to service the song the way that you can now, it would cost $100,000 back then.
Right. Or I totally get it.
You know, I think our first record cost like $300,000 or something. You know what I mean?
Burning and it's Tree. Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. It's pretty good.
Wow.
But, you know, it's not, it ain't Exile on Main Street.
Yeah. It's not Led Zeppelin 1. I get it. Well, yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
You know, but so I struggle a lot with that. I struggle with you know, we live in a world of things pretending to be other things, right? You know, it's like,
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and it has a huge effect on our humanity as artists and musicians and painters. It really does. But there was one Mona Lisa. Is that the greatest painting you've ever seen? No.
No.
It's great. It's amazing. But it has an energy to it because there's only one.
Well, I think the problem is because I'm into photography, right? I love photography. And I look at all these pictures and this won an award, that won an award. And I immediately see all the post-production and I'm totally turned off because the problem is the skill set that people now work on isn't, man, let me get the right light here. It's, oh, I got to work on my post-production skills because I can make it look great. Yeah. And so when I see photographs that I totally am turned off because I look at it, I'm like, it's not real. It's like the colors are shimmering and the sky, the stark contrast. And I'm like, man, this is post-production. I mean, I'm not.
Which is an art though, right? But it's painting by numbers.
I don't feel that in here when I look at that though. I feel like disappointment.
I think I vacillate back and forth between disappointment and just feeling like an old man screaming at kids to get off his lawn. it's like, look, here's the thing. Art, like everything else, you know, in the universe is evolving.
Right.
Okay. Language, in my opinion, is devolving, you know, with text.
Oh, God. Yeah. But, do you know they stop here in, I think this is true. My wife was telling me they no longer teach writing, like writing how to write cursive and stuff like that. They stopped teaching that down here in schools.
Yeah, mostly.
And I'm like, you know why? Because you don't need to learn how to write you are. Yeah. You know, so funny. You know, I mean, it's
apparently you don't even need to know how to spell, because I'll be reading a newspaper and there are grammar errors in the title. You know, I mean, come on, people, seriously, just run it by somebody over 40,
right?
Before you publish, you know, how hard is that?
I know. And like, you're right though, because
Pro Tools, I love it. You know, I use it every day. It can be a tool or it can be a weapon, you know, and it just, you know, it's changing what art is. Let's not say that you're a painter. If you're not going to just pull out an easel and paint.
Yeah.
And if you're just doing a digital thing and you're changing, you're not really a painter, are right. you? And that's okay. It's okay.
But don't
say you're a photographer if you have 10 million, pictures on a drive. You know, a monkey can do that.
Right.
Give a monkey a camera. I promise you, they will take some great pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and that's, we have to be aware of that. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm not saying, oh, this is better than that. But I'm saying we have to be honest with each other. We have to be honest about what is humanity and what isn't humanity.
No,
and
I agree.
A lot of bad things about humanity. But there's also a lot of amazing, incredible things about humanity. Let's not pretend that we're doing something we're not here.
Yeah, right. I agree with you. Right. It's like I'm looking at your landscape and everything. It's such a beautiful picture. But I'm sitting here thinking, I would guarantee in our lifetimes – it's going to get to the point where you could push a button and I'll see a totally different, maybe I'll see you on the beach in Hawaii or, you know, at, in Bryant Park in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so, is that cool? I don't know. Is it, some of it is, but you know, it's just weird. And maybe
I don't think it is. I honestly, I don't think it is cool. I this three-dimensional existence is enough for me for many, many, many lifetimes. And it just feels like we're, you know, exponentially accelerating the process now.
Yeah.
And you know, technology, it can be great. It truly can. But you kind of have to slow down a little bit. Like, do we really need this? Do we need 5G? Seriously? I mean, like, we're talking, you know, thousands of miles apart. We're talking right now.
Right.
How much more do we need? How much easier do we have to make it on? You know what I mean? Like, how much easier? Like, pick up a rock, you know, move it from one place to another.
Yeah.
Just try it. See what happens.
No, I get you, man. It's a tough balance. It really is. Yeah. And I think some of it is because we're older. I think, like, my kids don't question this stuff because this is what they grow up with, you know?
Yeah. Thank God I'm able to question it.
Yeah.
You know, I it must be hard. You know, they were born into this.
Yes.
Now they were born into this, you know, like looking down at this screen. It's like, look at all my friends. Those aren't your friends.
Bingo.
You know, those are heroes, you know, wow, look at what I did. Well, you didn't really do that. That's Snapchat, you know, just like somebody else did it. Some software programmer guy, you know, who probably got paid nothing actually did that.
Hey, let me ask you this. Any low points that you went through in life and how'd you get through them? Dark periods?
Yeah, my divorce. I was married before one time. Not something I'm proud of. And I, you know, it was mostly my fault. I look back, you know, we're good. Her and I are good friends still.
That's good.
We went through some really rough patches after the divorce. But we're still very close. She's still my family.
That's good.
And that was, I think that was a part where I think that's where I started to grow up a little bit.
After that.
You know, a decent functioning adult, you know. My parents passing, very difficult. They're still with me. They're with me right now. telling me not to cuss.
Well, it's good that they are, because I won't ever tell you that.
So I don't watch my language, you know. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot. I'm more aware now. I used to, you know, drink and have a lot more, fun than I do now. And
are you sober? Are you someone who's gotten sober?
Right now I'm sober. I've been sober for about 5 years, I think.
Awesome, man. Congratulations.
I just woke up one morning. I was so tired. I can't do this anymore. I'm too tired, you know? And I just got a lot more done. Maybe some people would disagree with this, but I'm probably easier to get along with now.
You gotta be if you were like an alcoholic and you're sober now, like any addict, whatever the addiction is, man, you've gotta be an easier person to deal with.
I think I was just a really insecure person, and I still am, you know. I still think any day now someone's going to figure out how I'm faking it, you know? but
you don't need alcohol to cope with that now.
No, I don't. Speaking of, I can't remember. I remember one funny story from Burning Tree. We were at the Coconut Teaser. It's a great club that gave us our break. A guy named Len Fagan ran this place. And that's actually how I met my first wife, Nina. We were about to go on stage, and you know, chemicals were not available for us.
Right.
And we realized we had never played a sober gig.
Wow.
The whole time we were a band, ever. That's... Even rehearsals, you know, I would show up with a bottle of vodka, Donnie would show up with a bottle of Jim, and Mark would show up with a bottle of Jack. And we'd rehearse till they were gone. Pretty much, you know.
Holy shit.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it was ridiculous, right? So, but we went on and played, and we were terrified. We thought it was the worst gig we ever played. And people still tell me that was the greatest gig you guys ever played. It's the best you guys ever sounded.
Yeah.
So.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you, man. Well, I'm glad you're sober, man. I'm glad you're feeling good. Mm. Any advice you'd go back and give to younger Mark, if you were open-minded to listen, what would you have said?
You're not as important as you think you are. You know, just chill out and just try to. I was so set in my ways and worried about the future that I was not, I lost my focus on what I was doing at the time. And you can't do that. It is a recipe for failure. You just have to, you know, be open organically to what's going on, to the people you trust, take advice, figure out when to take the advice and when to say, no, I'm doing it my way.
There you go. Back to saying no.
Learn your lessons, yeah. You know, and then lick your wounds. But I would say, you know, to young people, music is important. It's important. Okay. Art is important, and it's not about making it easier. Okay. It's not about the thing I like about Pro Tools is it makes it cheaper.
Gotcha.
You know, it makes it so that you can, you know, everybody's a producer now.
Right.
Every kid with a computer and, you know, is a producer and a musician, and like, oh, check out this song that I wrote and produced and played. It's just like, well, okay. I guess I get it. You know, I mean, it's painting by numbers. It's throwing loops together, you know, like check out this beat I wrote, you know, it's like, you didn't write that.
You know, yeah. You put it together.
You grabbed a bunch of things, and that's okay. I'm not saying
sure.
There isn't value to that, but it's very dangerous when you start telling yourself that you are smarter than you really are. You know, I have come to realize at my ripe old age that I am an idiot.
Well, yeah, you know what, man? I think in general, I have this expression, smart people realize how little they know, and stupid people think they know everything. That's been my observation.
I used to think I know everything. I jump in always trying to fix things, you know. My ex used to call me the fixer.
That's why you can't say no, man.
I can't say no.
It's a codependency. It's all codependent stuff, man.
Yeah, it's codependency. It truly is, you know, without getting into psychobabble. But it, you know, you there's an effect for everything you do. Yeah. My instinct is to catch somebody.
Right.
You know, and help them. And but there is a butterfly effect for everything we do.
100%. How little consequence. It is.
And sometimes being unliked and saying no is the greatest thing you can do for someone.
For
and
yourself. For yourself, yeah. More importantly. Yeah, man, for sure. Hey, let's talk about back to playing for a minute. Who's some of the favorite guitar players you've enjoyed jamming with?
Man, yeah, it's wow. How do we save the guitar, right? At this point,
I think it's coming back.
Bring it back, you know. The favorite guitar players that I played with, or
that you've enjoyed jamming with, yeah.
In general,
yeah. No, either one. You could talk about either one or whatever you like. Talk about guys you've played with, actually.
Uh oh, are we frozen?
Sort of. I hear you, but I can't see you. We're halfway frozen. There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so favorite guitar players that I've played with?
Or, yeah, played with.
Well, playing with Bob Weir was pretty great.
Holy shit, when'd you do that?
He would come up and jam sometimes with
CRB?
Yeah. And when Phil came up, of course, I was out of a job. So he would just come up and play through my rig. And I would sneak into the audience, you know, and stand in the back and watch. And that was freaking amazing. Watching this is like, what? This is so weird. You know, people would look over at me like, wait a second, aren't you? No, I'm not. Watch the show.
Wow. So Phil Lesh and Bob Weir would come up.
Yeah. And that was really fantastic. But I have to say, one of the most old school fluid guitar players was Mark.
Yeah.
He, like Neil Young, Mark Ford could play a single note and it would sound like no other guitar player. That is a guitar player.
Yeah, man. 100%.
Diddly stuff. Now, in that category, Tracy Guns.
Yeah.
Is unbeatable.
Right.
He truly is. Like, I didn't even get it. You know, after he asked me to join LA Guns, they were playing at a show in LA, and I thought, fuck, I better go see this band. You know, what the hell is this all about? So I'm watching the band, and I got to be honest, they were freaking amazing.
Yeah, he's a great player.
Great. He's such a great guitar player. Yeah. He does have a lot of Jimmy Page in him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not musically, it's slightly different. It's an updated version, but he's got that in him, and he really truly believes in what he does. So those two guys, you know, Neil Casal's a great guitar player.
Oh, God, yeah.
Completely different kind of guitar player.
He's wonderful, man.
He's a texture guy. You know, I think of him more of a you know, like a Radiohead type approach.
He's one of my favorite players, man. He's got such good tone, that guy.
Ghetto bird.
What's the matter?
There's a ghetto bird flying overhead.
Oh, airplane?
We get a fire copter that goes, that we're like right under the route of some fire helicopter thing or something.
I couldn't even hear it. It's weird. Huh. Who else?
Brian Whelan's a great guitar player.
He is. He is.
He really is. He's a very tasteful guitar player. I had him play on a session for me one time, and he just played rhythm, really, you know. And then we had like I wanted him to come back and fix some things, and we had a falling out over that for some reason. I don't some stupid misunderstanding.
Have you guys patched it up?
We patched it up.
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah, he was such a humble guy. He was a really nice person.
He is a humble guy. He said something that just rubbed me the wrong way, and then I said something back and whatever, just kind of hurt my feelings or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. But then I went back to listen. I actually play a lot of guitar on that song, and I couldn't get one part of it right. And I unmuted what he did in the original, on the original session, and that was it.
It sounded good. Yeah.
Right. He had this old Ron Wood feel, like Keith Richards-y kind of feel. And it just like, that was the one I ended up using.
I really enjoyed talking to him. He's a very genuine guy, man.
Yeah, he's super funny too.
Yeah.
I like funny people that make me laugh. You know, Chris is, some of these people, you wouldn't think so. Brian's so quiet.
He is pretty quiet. I was surprised to hear you say he's funny. He was very sweet, very lovely guy. But he was pretty quiet. He wasn't
got a dark, sarcastic.
That's funny.
Find very amusing.
That's good, man. Yeah. What's the first record you ever bought? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I sure do. Black Market Clash.
Whoa.
Hell yeah. It was the first, you know, I was behind on all that stuff because my parents wouldn't let me go to concerts. I was a dork. I didn't talk to girls. I didn't know, you know, I had no idea about anything. I was just.
That's unusual when you have two sisters. Usually the guys with the sisters are like the ladies, the magnets.
I was not a ladies man. You know, I don't think I've ever been a ladies man really. But I wanted to be. You know, once I started playing music, like, wait a second, girls are talking to me.
Yeah, yeah. I like this.
But I met a guy named Al Ulifer, and he has no idea what an influence he was on me. I bring him up any possible time I can.
That's cool.
He is the guy that got me into television, Tom Verlaine, The Velvet Underground, Parliament, everything at the time that mattered. He dragged me into it, kicking and screaming. He would come to my house, knock on the door with a record in his hand. He'd go to my record player, he'd put it on there, and he'd make me listen to it. And I didn't get it. It's like, this sucks, but it didn't suck. And later on, I realized that it didn't suck.
That's cool, man.
And it was something that he changed my life that way.
Are you buddies with him on Facebook at least?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Are you buddies with him on Facebook?
No, we talk on the phone still.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you're friends with him. So, okay.
That kind of stuff. He's a crazy guy. He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
But that was a huge influence on me.
Top Desert Island Discs. Knee Jerk Reaction, top three.
Man, Knee Jerk would have to be Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin.
Which Floyd album?
You know, Dark Side,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. I would have to say In Through the Outdoor.
Interesting.
Maybe. Okay. Man, the third one's always the hardest because, the Beatles, the Stones, the Who, the Cocteau Twins. There's all sorts of weird stuff. Bowie, Neil Young, Dylan.
Gotcha, man. You're a child of the 70s.
I'm so sexist. I didn't. Did I name any women in that? Yeah, Cocteau Twins.
Oh, dude, you're done. You've got way too many now at this point. You had over your quota.
Billie Holiday. There you go.
All righty. Most important things you've learned about yourself throughout your life?
I think I said it earlier, but you know, I'm an idiot. You know, I just have to, whenever I start doing something, I'm conscious about like, do it in an organic, open-minded way. And then when I start finishing it, I hate it, you know, and I want to do something else. And I think a lot of that is ego, you know, and like we were talking about earlier, like worrying about what other people think. But
well, you know, there are people, some people are really good starters and not good finishers.
I'm a big finisher now. I think it's very, very important to finish. Anybody can start something.
Yeah.
That's really easy. The hardest part in life, and that's with anything.
Oh, it's
a marriage, a job, college, anything. There has to be a beginning and an end. And then you move on to the next chapter. You know, it's like chapters in a book.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I realize a lot of the things that were important to me were a giant waste of time. And I try not to beat myself up about it because I want to
You got to move forward, man.
I live as full a life as I can now. But, you know, not just ignoring family, you know, ignoring, you know, going to a birthday, a niece's birthday, or you know, and because, oh, I've got this important thing I got to do or whatever, you know, like, it's stupid. I mean, you have to remember that the art is more important than the artist. The artist is a vessel and they're lucky to do it. And a lot of them have, some of them have talent, not a lot. Some of them have a lot of talent that lasts throughout a lifetime. But it's the art that you create that means and you leave behind.
So you're better balanced as you're getting older.
I'm much more balanced.
That's great, man.
I am easier to get along with. You know, if you hear laughing from my wife in the background, you know.
Don't worry, mine would be laughing the same. Trust me.
I am, as I get older, I try not to take myself so seriously, you know, and it's really hard to take the world seriously, right?
For all of us. Yeah. You just got to give 110% and then whatever the cards, you know, focus on the good and that's it, man. Yeah.
Die with your sword in your hand.
There you go, man. Something about yourself people might be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
A little odd. I think people find a lot of things about me odd. I am a sensitive person, and I worry too much about that. You know, I worry too much about what I'm accomplishing rather than the importance of something that I'm accomplishing.
Yeah, so you tend to take things too personally sometimes.
I take things too personally. It's one of the things I work on a lot. Yeah. Mark Ford's kid told me one time, his name's Elijah, and I was on a tour with Mark. It was on his solo record. And it was me and Mark, his kid. He asked, hey, do you mind if we give my kid a shot for the guitar? I'm like, sure, it's a great kid. And that was a bit of a rough tour. Mark and I were kind of at odds. I was tour manager, bass player, and the keyboard player, and it was a lot for me to take on. But it was fun. I think we did that for about 2 years. But one time after Mark and I got in a fight, you know, and I stormed out of the sound check and whatever, and Elijah came out to me and he said, you know, it's really important for you to be right, huh? And I got really pissed off at him. Who's this cocky little shit, you know, telling me about what's important or whatever, right? And years later, I realized, you know, I'm so glad he said that to me, because it is important to be right. It's very important for us to be right. It is not important for me to take the credit of being right. But it's important to get things right. That's why we're here, aren't we? Mm. Isn't that why we're doing everything we do? Building a house and making a song, and it's got to be the best that it can possibly be. I have no idea what your question was, but for some reason.
No, it was something about you. People would be surprised to hear, find a little odd. See, I don't 100% agree with that. I don't think when I stop, I think it's important to do things right, but I no longer think it's like when I have a conversation with somebody, when I was much younger, it always was important for me, even with my wife, I'm right here. And it was important that she saw my point. And I was actually at a Naranon meeting, I think. Mm-hmm. And a guy, you know, they read the passages and I didn't go to these meetings very long. And he opens up in today's passage, says, what's so important about being right? And when he said that, it was like the sky parted and the sun came up for me. Because I felt, and I was at a point in time where I was making changes in my life. I wanted to be less stress and have more happiness. And I felt a flood of, like, I said, man, I'm so glad I heard this, because I have spent a lot of energy being of importance of being right. And who gives a shit?
Okay, so let me clarify what I mean.
Yeah, and I don't think you're talking about being right in that context. I think you're talking about the integrity.
I'm not talking about winning an argument and proving to everybody that you were right.
Yeah,
and was wrong. I used to do that when I was a younger, you know, even dumber man. but it's important to get things right.
Yeah, when you have to have integrity.
It's important. It's not as important for a single person in society, but it's important for society.
Yeah.
You know, you can't start that's the mess we're in right now. You can't believe anything.
Yeah.
Anybody said there used to be a line that you didn't cross. You couldn't state something as fact if it wasn't.
Right.
You know, you could state it, you could dance around it, and you could state a strong opinion, but you couldn't forward that without being shamed. We're not talking about legality.
Right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about morality, you know, not totally in a religious way. We're talking about integrity.
Yeah, integrity is what you're talking
about. It is important to have a life, to have a string of events in your life where you tried your best to get it right.
Yep, I get you. I agree with you on that. Yeah, that speaks to you. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. That's about your integrity and your intent on what you're doing things. Yeah, I agree with you on that. But yeah, totally, man. Who's had the biggest influence on you, Mark, both musically and then personally?
My parents.
Oh, wow.
For sure. 100%. Musically, I gotta go back to Anton. You know, it's not necessarily, it's not a direct transference. Like, oh my God, I want to make music that sounds like that. You know, or that's the process now with how I want to make music. It's not about that. It was about the right time, right place. I learned so much about letting go.
Yeah.
And just letting the actual art. I think it was one of the first bands that I worked with that I truly had confidence in regarding their ability to do something interesting, to do something beautiful and compelling artistically. You know, so it kind of it helped me to relax a little bit. Like, well, wait a second, I don't need to fix everything here.
Yeah, you could just be the. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and Anton was the guy that would, on a daily basis, remind me of that. You know, that I am not the king here. He is the king, and I'm working, I'm the hand of the king. You know, and he would, you know, Anton, you know, that guitar is out of tune. Don't tell me it's out of tune. And, you know, it is what it is. And it's like, I'm, you know, look, it's out of tune. It's not about opinion. It's out of tune.
Right, it's a fact.
And Anton put the other three guitars on there, which were also out of tune. Okay. When you brought up all three faders, that was the Brian Jones Sound Massacre. And that's what made it great.
Right.
And I realized, you know, some of the greatest music is not in tune, you know, and I'm a very analytical person when I produce. I want everything to be technically right. I don't want to drop any ball there.
Right.
But you can't let the music always be technically right. If there's a great artist in front of you, let them do what they do. And that's a producer whose name will be remembered.
Right.
He may not have done a lot of physical work at the time, but he made the right decision to let it go, you know, and to let it happen.
That's cool that you got that out of that experience with him, man.
Yeah. I mean, I still struggle with it. I still am a control freak in some ways, you know, and I struggle with it, but I always, it's nice. I don't know if I would have been a good producer back in the day where you just had 15 minutes of 2-inch tape and a few takes because times, you know, clock's running out on today's $2,000 a day studio.
Yeah.
So those are the guys who were producers, those guys, you know, Kramer and George Martin and those guys that had to technically figure out, all right, we have a limited amount of tools here. How do we make this happen? How do we let this incredible music and sound, you know, find its way to vinyl?
Any non-musical superpowers?
Oh, God. I don't know. I love animals.
That's cool, man.
That's a superpower, but I'm a big fan of dogs, horses, that kind of thing. So I don't know. I think it's important for us to stay connected.
Yeah, I think so too.
Not a toy, you know, not like a purse for Paris Hilton. You know? Sorry, Paris. But yeah, I mean, it's like people, we tend to use animals as tools, and I hate that.
Yeah, that's totally not cool, man.
Yeah.
Hey, two more questions, Mark. Toughest decision you ever had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do?
Well, since we're talking about music, quitting CRB, quitting the Chris Robinson Band, really tough. It was an incredible time in my life. Some of the greatest music I've made. It was just, you know, without getting into the details, it was just too much for me. There was a lot of touring. It was tough for me to do without, you know, drinking and, you know, everything else.
That's a huge sacrifice. Good for you, man.
It was a big one. It was a really, really big one. And it was just a hard thing to do to Chris. Like, not that I'm that important, but I felt like I was kind of letting him down.
Well, yeah, you felt a sense of loyalty, obligation.
I did. I still do. I still wish him the best. But it was just too much for me after a while. It was hard. He's an intense person. I mean, 24/7. That guy, when you rolled out of your bunk in the morning, he was already up reading a book, listening to music. Okay. And when you got up to take a piss in the middle of the night, he was the last guy in the lounge going to bed, doing the same thing, reading a book, listening to music, talking to whoever is there, holding, you know, he's got so much in common with Anton. He would probably hate me for saying that. He's like, the two of them are cut from the same cloth, probably opposite sides of the cloth, you know, but, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you did that, man, because you can't keep messing your body up and drinking. You know that, man. And that is a tough decision, though. Thank you for sharing that. And last question, what's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And how much would you say is intentional and how much is just a natural part of aging?
I try to show up when I say I'm going to show up now.
But you seem like you always would have done that.
No. I always wanted to. And I always thought that I was, you know, but there was a certain amount of like, oh, well, they can wait for me. You know, I'm important here. So I need to, you know, they're just going to have to wait. And I would come up with excuses, you know, I'd love to be there, but this happened and I can't help it. And, you know, honestly, 90%+ of the time, I probably could have helped it. I should have just been more considerate. So I think I'm a lot more considerate than I used to be. I hope I am. That's what I'm trying.
It sounds like also you've really, like, your ego was running the show for a little while there. And it sounds like you've done a great job. Like, I would never think you're a guy who had an ego, but from some of the things you said, it sounded like that was maybe the case.
Yeah, I never fit in. I always thought that I was I was observing everything around me that was great. And I wasn't really an important part of that. So my ego was there to tell me that I was.
You know, wow, like, man, that's really huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, that's still, you know, I'm, you know, it's easy to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. But man, we're all a work in process, you know, everything evolves.
Progress. That's for sure.
Yeah. Everybody's like that, man. It's not like, you know, you got it.
It's progress now. You know what I mean? It was just a work in something, you know? Yeah, a little bit of progress every once in a while.
Yeah, it's not like you got an issue. If you have whatever your issues are, you know, you recognize them, and then oh, it's fixed. It's not like a sore, a cut on your finger. You know, this is shit that you gotta, you know, all of our demons, man. We're constantly, you know, get back inside. You know, it's an ongoing battle, man.
It's an ongoing battle, and you know, you see some of these artists out there, you can see they're struggling all the time.
Well, in your position, you can really see him as a producer. You know,
and it's
sure.
great for us because there has to be some kind of sacrifice and pain in great music.
Yeah.
There just has to be. There is in great comedy.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be stretched to the edge of your ability, you know, as a human being to say something or create something that's important.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why a lot of people who get older as artists, they just kind of, people think they lose it or whatever, you know, they're not doing something edgy anymore. But I've come to appreciate the people that, you know, don't pretend to be edgy anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happier than I was. You know, I'm not going to write a bunch of music about burning down the world, you know?
Yeah, man, I totally get that. Dude, first of all, thank you for everything. You've been a real nice guy to talk to, really open. And thank you for being so open and kind, man, and sharing all this stuff. I want to tell people where they could find you. It's Mark Dutton, Mark with a K. But if you are interested in, look, if you are a younger artist or if you're working with a younger artist who's looking for a producer and a management company that can help them develop and see their way through the music business, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and actually someone to evaluate, you know, the reality of the potential and what you could do with it and maximize whatever talent you have, Mark's a guy you probably want to talk with. And the best way to do that is to get a hold of him through his production company email, which is Maud Production and Management Company. And that email is maudprod@gmail.com. And what you want to do is send them a video or a link to the video of the artist and what, you know, description, what that person's going on and, you know, what are the things you're looking for? And then this way he has enough information to make a decision as to, you know, does it make sense for you guys to connect and at least get back to you? And
then Audrey and I will argue about it for you for a few days.
Yeah. And then Audrey and
back to you.
Yeah. And then one of them, whoever wins the argument, or loses,
she'll tell you that she always wins.
We'll get back to you. Yeah. Hey, you know, you should tell her, Audrey, what's so important about being right?
There you go. And then she'll throw it back in my face and quote me. So.
Did I get that right, man? Is there anything else I missed on that?
I think it's, you know, she'll probably strangle me because I didn't really think ahead on that stuff. But, you know, I'm not hard to find.
All right. So check him out. He's also on Facebook as Muddy Stardust or Mark Dutton. Mark, any final words of wisdom?
Oh, man. Just do what makes you happy and, you know, show up on time.
Do what makes you happy and show up on time. That's about as smart as you can get, man, to be honest with you. Hey, listen, thank you for everything. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for being so candid and open. I really, really enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support and subscribe to the show. Thanks again to Mark Muddy Dutton for showing up on time and for doing the right thing and for being right. And make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com, sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar or your bass or your drums and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.